He started to bend down.
No, pick me up,
she said. She held up her arms, more or less vertical. He paused a beat, and then swung her in the air and settled her in the crook of his elbow, kissed her cheek gently. Good night, he said again.
Carry me,
she said.
I'm tired.
He carried her past the corrals, past the horse barn, across the yard to the house. Carmen was waiting on the porch, leaning on a column, watching them approach.
There you are,
she said.
Mommy, I want Mr. Reacher to come in and say good night,
Ellie said.
Well, I don't know if he can.
I only work here, Reacher said. I don't live here.
Nobody will know,
Ellie said.
Come in through the kitchen. There's only the maid in there. She works here, too, and she's allowed in the house.
Carmen stood there, unsure.
Mommy, please,
Ellie said.
Maybe if we all go in together,
Carmen said.
Through the kitchen,
Ellie said. Then she changed her voice to a fierce whisper that was probably louder than talking.
We don't want the Greers to see us.
Then she giggled and rocked in Reacher's arms and ducked her face down into his neck. Carmen glanced at him, a question in her face. He shrugged back. What's the worst thing can happen? He lowered Ellie to the ground and she took her mother's hand. They walked together to the kitchen door and Carmen pushed it open. Sunset, the boy wrote, and noted the time. The two men crawled backward from the lip of the gulch and raised themselves up on their knees and stretched. Off duty, the boy wrote, and noted the time. Then they all three scrabbled around on their knees and pulled the rocks off the corners of the tarp, hiding their pickup, folded it as neatly as they could without standing up, and stowed it in the load bed, repacked the cooler and collapsed the telescopes, and climbed three in a row into the cab, drove out of the far side of the gulch, and headed due west across the hard pan toward the red horizon. Inside the kitchen, the maid was loading a huge dishwashing machine. It was made of green enamel. It had probably been the very latest thing, around the time man first walked on the moon. She looked up and said nothing, just kept on stacking plates. Reacher saw the three bowls he had brought her. They were rinsed and ready.
This way,
Ellie whispered. She led them through a door that led to a back hallway. There was no window, and the air was suffocating. There were plain wooden stairs on one side, painted red, worn back to the wood in crescent shapes on each tread. She led them upward. The stairs creaked under Reacher's weight. They finished inside a kind of closet on the second floor. Ellie pushed the door open and crossed a hallway and made a right into a narrow corridor. Everything was wooden. The walls, the floor, the ceiling, everything was painted red. Ellie's room was at the end of the corridor. It was maybe 12 feet square, and red, and very hot. It faced south, and must have been baking in the sun all afternoon. The drapes were closed and had been all day, Reacher guessed, offering some meager protection from the heat.
We'll go get washed up,
Carmen said.
Mr. Reacher, we'll wait here, okay?
Ellie watched until she was sure he was staying. He sat down on the end of the bed to confirm it, to help her reach her conclusion. She turned slowly and followed her mother out to the bathroom. The bed was narrow, maybe 30 inches wide, and short, appropriate for a kid. It had cotton sheets, printed with small, colored animals of uncertain genus. There was a night table, and a bookcase, and a small armoire. This furniture looked reasonably new. It was made of blonde wood, first bleached and then hand-painted with cheerful designs. It looked nice, probably bought in a cute little boutique and hauled over from Austin, he thought, or maybe all the way from Santa Fe. Some of the bookshelves held books, and the others held stuffed animals all jumbled together and crammed into the spaces. He could hear the old air conditioner running. It thumped and rattled patiently. It was louder here. Must be mounted in the attic, he thought. It made a soothing sound, but it didn't do much about cooling the house. Up there in the trapped air of the second floor, it felt like 120 degrees. Ellie and Carmen came back into the room. Ellie was suddenly quiet and bashful, maybe because she was in her pajamas. They looked like regular cotton shorts and a t-shirt, but they were printed with little things that might have been rabbits. Her hair was damp, and her skin was pink. The back of one hand was wedged in her mouth. She climbed onto the bed and curled up near the pillow, using about half the available length of the mattress, close to him, but careful not to touch him. "Okay. Good night, kid," he said. "Sleep well."
"Kiss me,"
she said. He paused a second, and then he bent down and kissed her forehead. It was warm and damp and smelled of soap. She curled up more and snuggled down into the pillow.
"Thank you for being our friend," she said.
He stood up and stepped toward the door, glanced at Carmen. "Did you tell her to say that, or is it for real?"
"Can you find your way back down?"
Carmen asked him. He nodded.
"I'll see you tomorrow,"
she said. She stayed in Ellie's bedroom, and he found the closet with the back stairs in it. He went down to the inside hallway and through the kitchen. The maid was gone. The old dishwasher was humming away to itself. He stepped out into the night and paused in the darkness and silence of the yard. It was hotter than ever. He stepped toward the gate. Ahead of him, the sunset had gone. The horizon was black. There was pressure in the air. 100 miles away to the southwest, he could see heat lightning flickering. Faint sheets and bolts of dry electricity discharging randomly, like a gigantic celestial camera taking pictures. He looked straight up. No rain. No clouds. He turned around and caught gleams of white in the darkness off to his right. A t-shirt. A face. A semicircle of forehead showing through the back of a ball cap. Bobby Grier again. "Bobby," he said. "Enjoy your ride?" Bobby ignored the inquiry.
"I was waiting for you."
"Why?"
"Just making sure you came back out again."
"Why wouldn't I?"
"You tell me. Why would you go in there at all? In the first place. All three of you. Like a little family."
"You saw us?"
Bobby nodded. "I see everything."
"Everything?" Reacher repeated.
"Everything I need to."
Reacher shrugged. "I kissed the kid good night," he said. "You got a problem with that?"
Bobby was quiet for a beat. "Let me walk you back to the bunkhouse," he said. "I need to talk to you."
He didn't talk any on the way down through the yard. He just walked. Reacher kept pace and looked ahead at the night sky in the east. It was vast and black and filled with stars. Apart from dim windows in some of the Greer buildings, there was absolute pitch darkness everywhere. It threw the stars into vivid relief, impossibly tiny and numerous points of light thrusting backward through billions of cubic miles of space. Reacher liked peering out into the universe. He liked thinking about it. He used it for perspective. He was just a tiny, insignificant speck, briefly sparked to life in the middle of nowhere. So what really mattered? Maybe nothing at all. So maybe he should just go ahead and bust Sloop Greer's head and have done with it. Why not? In the context of the whole universe, how was that so very different from not busting it at all? My brother had a problem, Bobby said awkwardly. I guess you know that. I heard he cheated on his taxes, Reacher said. Bobby nodded in the dark. IRS snoops are everywhere. Is that how they found him? Snooping? Well, how else would they? Bobby asked. He went quiet, walked ahead a couple of paces. Anyway, Sloop went to jail, he said. Reacher nodded. Getting out Monday, I heard. That's right. So he's not going to be too happy finding you here, kissing his kid, getting friendly with his wife. Reacher shrugged as he walked. I'm just here to work. Right. As a wrangler. Not as a nursemaid. I get time off, right? But you need to be careful how you spend it. Reacher smiled. You mean I need to know my place? Right, Bobby said. And your place ain't alongside my brother's wife, or getting cozy with his kid. A man can't choose his friends. Sloop ain't going to be happy. He gets home and finds some outsider has chosen his wife and kid for his friends. Reacher stopped walking, stood still in the dark. Thing is, Bobby, why would I give a rat's ass what makes your brother happy? Bobby stopped, too. Because we're a family. Things get talked about. You need to get that through your head, or you won't work here too long. You could get run right out of here. You think? Yeah, I think. Reacher smiled again. Who are you going to call? The sheriff with the second-hand car? Guy like that could get a heart attack just thinking about it. Bobby shook his head. West Texas? We look after things personally. It's a tradition. Never had too big of a law enforcement thing around here, so we kind of accustomed ourselves. Richard took a step closer. So you going to do it? He said. You want to do it now? Bobby said nothing. Reacher nodded. Maybe you'd prefer to set the maid on me, he said. Maybe she'll come after me with a skillet. Josh and Billy will do what they're told. The little guys? The maid might be better. Or you, even. Josh and Billy get in the ring with bulls that weigh a ton and a half. I ain't going to be too worried about you. Reacher started walking again. Whatever, Bobby. I only said goodnight to the kid. No reason to start World War III over it. She's starved for company. So is her mother. What can I do about it? You can get smart about it, is what, Bobby said. I told you before. She lies about everything.
So whatever big story she's been telling you, chances are it's bullshit. So don't go making a fool out of yourself falling for it. You wouldn't be the first.
They turned the corner beyond the corrals and headed for the bunkhouse door.
What does that mean? Reacher asked.
How dumb do you think I am?
She's gone all day, every day, for the best part of a month, gone all night as often as she can get away with it, leaving the kid here for us to tend to. And she's gone where?
Some motel up in Pecos is where.
Screwing the brains out of whatever new guy she can get to believe her bullshit stories about how her husband doesn't understand her, which is entirely her business. But it's my business if she thinks she can go ahead and bring the guy back here. 2 days before her husband gets home, passing you off as some stranger looking for ranch work? What kind of crap is that?
What did you mean? I wouldn't be the first.
Exactly what I said. Talk to Josh and Billy about it. They ran him off.
Reacher said nothing. Bobby smiled at him.
Don't believe her, he said. There are things she doesn't tell you, and what she does tell you is mostly lies.
Why doesn't she have a key to the door?
She had a key to the damn door. She lost it is all. It's never locked, anyway. Why the hell would it be locked? We're 60 miles from the nearest crossroads.
So why does she have to knock?
She doesn't have to knock. She could walk right in, but she puts on a big thing about how we exclude her. But it's all bullshit. Like, how do we exclude her? Snoop married her, didn't he?
Reacher said nothing.
So you work, if you want to, Bobby said. But stay away from her and the kid. And I'm saying that for your sake, okay?
Can I ask you something? Reacher said.
What?
Did you know your hat is on backward?
A what?
Your cap, Reacher said. It's on backward. I wondered if you knew that, or if maybe you just kind of slipped around accidentally.
Bobby stared at him.
I like it this way, he said.
Reacher nodded again.
Well, I guess it keeps the sun off of your neck, he said.
Keeps it from getting any redder.
You watch your mouth, Bobby said.
You stay away from my brother's family and watch your damn mouth.
Then he turned in the dark and headed back up to the house. Reacher stood and watched him walk away. Beyond him, the lightning still danced on the far southwest horizon. Then he disappeared behind the barn, and Reacher listened to the sound his boots made in the dust until it faded away to nothing.
6. Reacher went right to bed, even though it was still early. Sleep when you can, so you don't need to when you can't. That was his rule. He had never worked regular hours. To him, there was no real difference between a Tuesday and a Sunday, or a Monday and a Friday, or night and day. He was happy to sleep 12 hours and then work the next 36. And if he didn't have to work the next 36, then he'd sleep 12 hours again, and again, as often as he could, until something else cropped up. The bed was short and the mattress was lumpy. The air in the room had settled like a thick, hot soup on the thin sheet covering him. He could hear insects outside, clicking and whining loudly. There might have been a billion of them, separately audible if he concentrated hard enough, merging together into a single scream if he didn't. The sound of the night, far from anywhere. There were lonely guttural cries from cougars and coyotes way off in the distance. The horses heard them, too, and he sensed restless movement over in the barn, quieting after a moment, starting up again after the next ghostly plaintive yelp. He heard rustling air and imagined he felt changes in pressure as colonies of bats took flight. He imagined he could feel the beat of their leathery wings. He fell asleep watching the stars through a small window high above him. The road from Pecos to El Paso is more than 200 miles long and is dotted on both sides with occasional clumps of motels and gas stations and fast food outlets. The killing crew drove an hour west, which took them 70 miles, and then stopped at the second place they saw. That was the woman's habit. Not the first place, always the second place. And always arrive very late. It was close to a superstition, but she rationalized it as good security. The second place had a gas station big enough for 18-wheelers to use, and a 2-story motel, and a 24-hour diner. The tall, fair man went into the motel office and paid cash for 2 rooms. They weren't adjoining. One was on the first floor, far from the office, and the second was upstairs, halfway down the row. The woman took the upstairs room.
"Get some sleep," she told her partners. "We've still got work to do."
Reacher heard Josh and Billy come back at 2 in the morning. The air was still hot. The insects were still loud. He heard the pickup engine a couple of miles south, growing nearer and louder, slowing, turning in at the gate. He heard the squeal of springs as it bounced across the yard. He heard it drive into the shed beneath him, and he heard the motor switch off. Then there was just tinkling and clicking as it cooled, and footsteps on the stairs. They were loud and clumsy. He stayed as deeply asleep as he could and tracked their sounds past him, over to the bathroom, back to their bunks. Their bedsprings creaked as they threw themselves down. Then there was nothing but the insects and the wet, rhythmic breathing of men who had worked hard all day and drunk hard all night. It was a sound he was familiar with. He had spent 17 years in dormitories, off and on. The insect noise was completely gone when he woke. So were the stars. The high windows showed luminous streaks of dawn in their place. Maybe 6 in the morning, he thought. Summer, this far south. It was already hot. He lifted his arm and checked his watch. 6:10. Saturday morning. He thought about Jody in London. It was 12:10 in London, 6 hours ahead. She would have been up for ages, probably at a museum, looking at pictures, maybe thinking about lunch in some English tea room. Then he thought about Carmen Greer, over in the main house, 48 hours away from waking up on the day Sloop came home. And then Ellie, maybe hot and restless on her tiny cot, innocently barreling on toward the day her little life would change again. He threw back the crumpled sheet and walked naked to the bathroom, carrying his clothes balled in his hand. Josh and Billy were still deep asleep. They were both still dressed. Josh still had his boots on. They were snoring half-heartedly, sprawled out and inert. There was a vague smell of old beer in the air, the smell of hangovers. He set the shower going warm until he had soaped the sweat off his body and then turned it to cold to wake himself up. The cold water was nearly as warm as the hot. He imagined it pumping out of the baked ground, picking up heat all the way. He filled his sink with water and soaked his clothes. It was a trick he'd picked up as a kid, long ago, somewhere out in the Pacific, from sentries on the midday watch.
If you dress in wet clothes, you've got a built-in air conditioner that keeps you cool until they dry out. An evaporative principle, like a swamp cooler. He dressed with the clammy cotton snagging against his skin and headed down the stairs and outside into the dawn. The sun was over the horizon ahead of him. The sky was arching purple overhead. No trace of cloud. The dust under his feet was still hot from yesterday. The watchers assembled piecemeal, like they had 5 times before. It was a familiar routine by then. One of the men drove the pickup to the boy's place and found him outside and waiting. Then they drove together to the second man's place, where they found that the routine had changed.
"He just called me," the second man explained. "Some different plan. We got to go someplace up on the Coyonosa Draw for new instructions. Face to face."
"Face to face with who?" the first man said.
"Not him, right?"
"No, some new people we're going to be working with." The boys said nothing. The first man just shrugged.
"Okay with me," he said. "Plus, we're going to get paid," the second man said.
"Even better," the first man said. The second man squeezed onto the bench seat and closed his door, and the pickup turned and headed north. Reacher walked around the corner of the bunkhouse and past the corrals to the barn. He could hear no sound at all. The whole place felt stunned by the heat. He was suddenly curious about the horses. Did they lie down to sleep? He ducked in the big door and found the answer was no, they didn't. They were sleeping, standing up, heads bowed, knees locked against their weight. The big old mare he had tussled with the night before smelled him and opened an eye, looked at him blankly, and moved a front foot listlessly and closed her eye again. He glanced around the barn, rehearsing the work he might be expected to perform. The horses would need feeding, presumably, so there must be a food store someplace. What did they eat? Hey, he guessed. There were bales of it all over the place. Or was that straw for the floor? He found a separate corner room stacked with sacks of some kind of food supplement, big waxed paper bags from some specialist feed supplier up in San Angelo. So probably the horses got mostly hay with some of the supplement to make up the vitamins. They'd need water, too. There was a faucet in one corner with a long hose attached to it, a trough in each stall. He came out of the barn and walked up the track to the house, peered in through the kitchen window. Nobody in there, no activity. It looked the same as it had when he left the night before. He walked on toward the road, heard the front door open behind him, and turned to see Bobby Greer stepping out on the porch. He was wearing the same T-shirt and the same ball cap, but now it was the right way around. The peak was low over his eyes. He was carrying a rifle in his right hand, one of the pieces from the rack in the hallway. A fine .22 bolt action, modern and in good condition. He put it up on his shoulder and stopped short.
"I was on my way to get you up," he said. "I need a driver."
"Why?" Reacher asked. "Where are you going?"
"Hunting," Bobby said. "In the pickup."
"You can't drive?"
"Of course I can drive, but it takes two. You drive while I shoot."
"You shoot from a truck."
"I'll show you," Bobby said.
He walked across to the motor barn, stopped next to the newer pickup. It had a roll bar built into the load bed.
"You drive," he said. "Out on the range.
I'm here and back, leaning on the bar. Gives me a 360-degree field of fire. While we're moving? That's the skill of it. It's fun. Snoop invented it. He was real good. What are you hunting? Armadillo, Bobby said.
He stepped sideways and pointed down the track into the desert. It was a narrow dirt road scuffed into the landscape, meandering left and right to avoid rock formations, taking the path of least resistance.
Hunting country, he said. It's pretty good, south of here. And they're all out there, good fat ones. Dillo chili. Can't beat it for lunch.
Reacher said nothing.
You never ate armadillo?
Bobby asked. Reacher shook his head.
Well, good eating, Bobby said. Back when my granddaddy was a boy, depression times, it was about all the eating there was. Texas turkey, they called it. Or Hoover hog. Kept people alive. Now the tree huggers have got it protected. But if it's on our land, it's ours to shoot. That's the way I see it.
I don't think so, Reacher said. I don't like hunting.
Why not? It's a challenge.
For you, maybe, Reacher said. I already know I'm smarter than an armadillo.
You work here, Reacher. You do what you're told.
We need to discuss some formalities before I work here.
Like what?
Like wages.
$200 a week, Bobby said. Bed and 3 squares a day thrown in.
Reacher said nothing.
Okay? Bobby asked. You wanted work, right? Or is it just Carmen you want?
Reacher shrugged. $200 a week? It was a long time since he had worked for $200 a week. But then, he wasn't there for the money.
Okay, he said. And you'll do whatever Josh and Billy tell you to.
Okay, Reacher said again. But I won't take you hunting. Not now. Not ever. Call it a matter of conscience. Bobby was quiet for a long moment.
I'll find ways to keep you away from her, you know. Every day, I'll find something.
I'll be in the barn, Reacher said, and walked away. Ellie brought his breakfast to him there. She was wearing a miniature set of blue denim dungarees. Her hair was wet and loose. She was carrying a plate of scrambled eggs. She had silverware in her breast pocket, upright. Like pens. She was concentrating on remembering a message.
My mommy says don't forget the riding lesson, she recited. She wants you to meet her here in the barn after lunch.
Then she ran back toward the house without another word. He sat down on a bale and ate the eggs, took the empty plate back to the kitchen and headed down to the bunkhouse. Josh and Billy weren't there to tell him to do anything. Suits me, he thought. He didn't go looking for them, just lay down and dozed in the heat. The Coronosa Draw was a watercourse with a bed wide enough to carry the runoff from the Davis Mountains to the Pecos River, which took it to the Rio Grande all the way down on the border with Mexico. But runoff was seasonal and unreliable, so the region was sparsely populated. There were abandoned farmsteads built close to the dry riverbed, far from each other, far from anywhere. One of them had an old sway-backed house baked gray by the sun. In front of it was an empty barn. The barn had no doors, just an open wall facing west toward the house. The way the buildings were set in the landscape, the interior of the barn was invisible, except from the yard right in front of it. The Crown Victoria was waiting inside the barn, its engine idling to keep the air going. The barn had an exterior staircase leading up to a hayloft, with a small platform outside the door at the top. The woman was out in the heat, up on the platform, where she could survey the meandering approach road. She saw the watcher's pickup 2 miles away. It was traveling fast and kicking up a plume of dust. She waited until she was sure it was unaccompanied, and then she turned and walked down the stairs, signaled to the others. They got out of the car and stood waiting in the heat. They heard the pickup on the road, and then it pulled around the corner of the barn and slowed in the yard. They directed it with hand signals, like traffic cops. They pointed into the barn. One of them led the truck on foot, gesturing like the guy on the airport apron. He brought it tight up to the rear wall, gesturing all the time, and then he gave a thumbs up to halt it. He stepped alongside the driver's window, and his partners stepped to the passenger door. The driver shut off the motor and relaxed. Human nature. The end of a fast drive to a secret rendezvous. The intrigue of new instructions. The prospect of a big payday. He wound down his window. On the passenger's side, the second man did the same thing. Then they both died, shot in the side of the head with 9mm bullets. The boy in the middle lived exactly 1 second longer, both sides of his face splattered with blood and brain tissue, his notebook clutched in his hands. Then the small, dark man leaned in and shot him twice in the chest. The woman pushed him out of the way and adjusted the window winders on both doors to leave the glass cracked open about an inch. An inch would let insects in and keep scavengers out. Insects would help with decomposition, but scavengers could drag body parts away, which would risk visibility. Richard dozed a couple of hours before Josh and Billy got back. They didn't give him any instructions. They just got cleaned up for lunch. They told him they were invited inside the house to eat, and he wasn't, because he had refused to drive. "Bobby told me you ran some guy off," he said. Joshua just smiled.
"What guy?" Billy said.
"Some guy came down here with Carmen."
"The Mexican?"
"Some friend of hers." Billy shook his head.
"Don't know anything about it. We never ran any guy off. What are we, cops?"
"You're the cop," Joshua said.
"Am I?"
Joshua nodded.
"Bobby said so. You were a military cop."
"You've been discussing me?" Joshua shrugged and went quiet.
"Got to go," Billy said.
20 minutes later, Carmen herself brought his armadillo lunch to him. It was in a covered dish and smelled strongly of chili. She left, nervous and in a hurry, without saying a word. He tried the meal. The meat was halfway between sweet and ordinary. It had been shredded and chopped and mixed with beans and two-alarm sauce from a bottle. Then, slightly overdone in a warm oven. He had eaten worse, and he was hungry, which helped. He took his time and then carried the dish back to the kitchen. Bobby was standing out on the porch steps like a sentry.
"Horses need more feed supplement," he called. "You'll go with Josh and Billy to pick it up. After siesta. Get as many bags as fit in the truck."
Reacher nodded and walked on to the kitchen, gave the used dish to the maid, and thanked her for the meal. Then he walked down to the barn and went inside and sat on a bale of straw to wait. The horses turned around in their stalls to watch him do it. They were patient and listless in the heat. One of them was chewing slowly. There were haystacks stuck to its lips. Carmen came in 10 minutes later. She had changed into faded blue jeans and a checked cotton shirt with no sleeves. She was carrying a straw hat and her pocketbook. She looked tiny and afraid.
"Bobby doesn't know you called the IRS," he said. "He thinks it was random snooping. So maybe Sloop does, too."
She shook her head.
"Sloop knows."
"How?"
She shrugged.
"Actually, he doesn't know, but he convinced himself it had to be me. He was looking for somebody to blame, and who else is there? No evidence or anything, but as it happens, he's right. Ironic, isn't it?"
"But he didn't tell Bobby."
"He wouldn't. He's too stubborn to agree with them. They hate me. He hates me. He keeps it a secret. They keep it a secret. From him, I mean. They make sure I know it."
"You should get out. You've got 48 hours. She nodded.
48 hours exactly, I think. They'll let him out at 7 in the morning. They'll drive all night to be there for him. It's about 7 hours. So he'll be back home this time on Monday, just after lunch."
"So get out. Right now."
"I can't."
"You should," he said. "This place is impossible. It's like the outside world doesn't exist."
She smiled bitterly.
"Tell me about it. I've lived here nearly 7 years. My whole adult life, give or take."
She hung her hat and her pocketbook on a nail in the wall, did all the saddling work herself. Quickly and efficiently. She was lithe and deft, the slim muscles in her arms bunched and relaxed as she lifted the saddles. Her fingers were precise with the buckles. She readied 2 horses in a quarter of the time he had taken to do 1.
"You're pretty good at this," he said.
"Gracias, señor," she said. "I get a lot of practice."
"So how can they believe you keep falling off, regular as clockwork?"
"They think I'm clumsy."
He watched her lead his horse out of its stall. It was one of the geldings. She was tiny beside it. In the jeans, he could have spanned her waist with his hand.
"You sure don't look clumsy," he said.
She shrugged.
"People believe what they need to."
He took the reins from her. The horse huffed through its nose and shifted its feet, moved its head up and down. His hand went with it.
"Walk him out,"
she said.
"Shouldn't we have leather pants and riding gloves?"
"Are you kidding? We never wear that stuff here. It's way too hot."
He waited for her. Her horse was the smaller mare. She wedged her hat on her head and took her pocketbook off the nail and put it in a saddlebag. Then she followed him, leading her mare confidently out into the yard, into the heat and the sun.
"Okay, like this,"
she said. She stood on the mare's left and put her left foot in the stirrup, gripped the horn with her left hand, and bounced twice on her right leg and jacked herself smoothly into the saddle. He tried it the same way, put his left foot in the stirrup, grasped the horn, put all his weight on the stirrup foot, and straightened his leg and pulled with his hand, leaned his weight forward and right, and suddenly he was up there in the seat. The horse felt very wide, and he was very high in the air. About the same as riding on an armored personnel carrier.
"Put your right foot in," she said.
He jammed his foot into the other stirrup and squirmed around until he was as comfortable as he was ever going to get. The horse waited patiently.
"Now, punch the reins on the horn in your left hand."
That part was easy. It was just a question of imitating the movies. He let his right hand swing free,
like he was carrying a Winchester repeater or a coil of rope.
Okay, now just relax,
and kick gently with your heels.
He kicked once, and the horse lurched into a walk. He used his left hand on the horn to keep himself steady. After a couple of paces, he began to understand the rhythm. The horse was moving him left and right and forward and back with every alternate step. He held tight to the horn and used pressure from his feet to keep his body still.
"Good," she said. "Now I'll go in front and he'll follow. He's pretty docile."
I would be too, he thought. 110 degrees and 250 pounds on my back.
Carmen clicked her tongue and kicked her heels, and her horse moved smoothly around his and led the way through the yard and past the house. She swayed easily in the saddle, the muscles in her thighs bunching and flexing as she kept her balance. Her hat was down over her eyes. Her left hand held the reins, and her right was hanging loose at her side. He caught the blue flash of the fake diamond in the sun. She led him out under the gate to the road and straight across without looking or stopping. He glanced left and right, south and north, and saw nothing at all except heat shimmer and distant silver mirages. On the far side of the road was a step about a foot high onto the limestone ledge. He leaned forward and let the horse climb it underneath him. Then the rock rose gently into the middle distance, reaching maybe 50 feet of elevation in the best part of a mile. There were deep fissures running east-west and washed out holes the size of shell craters. The horses picked their way between them. They seemed pretty sure on their feet. So far, he hadn't had to do any conscious steering, which he was happy about, because he wasn't exactly sure how to.
"Watch for rattlesnakes,"
Carmen called.
"Great," he called back.
"Horses get scared by anything that moves. They'll spook and run. If that happens, just hang on tight and haul on the reins."
"Great," he said again.
There were scrubby plants rooting desperately in cracks in the rock. There were smaller holes, 2 or 3 feet across, some of them with undercut sides. Just right for a snake, he thought. He watched them carefully at first. Then he gave it up, because the shadows were too harsh to see anything, and the saddle was starting to wear on him.
"How far are we going?" he called.
She turned like she had been waiting for the question.
"We need to get over the rise," she said, "down into the gulches."
The limestone smoothed out into broader, unbroken shelves, and she slowed to let his horse move up alongside hers. But it stayed just short of level, which kept him behind her, kept him from seeing her face.
"Bobby told me you had a key," he said.
"Did he?"
"He said you lost it."
"No, that's not true. They never gave me one."
He said nothing.
"They made a big point of not giving me one," she said, "like it was a symbol."
"So he was lying?"
She nodded, away from him.
"I told you. Don't believe anything he says."
"He said the door's never locked, anyway."
"Sometimes it is. Sometimes it isn't."
"He told me you don't have to knock, either."
"That's a lie, too," she said. "Since Sloop's been gone, if I don't knock, they run and grab a rifle. Then they go, 'Oh, sorry, but strangers prowling around the house make us nervous,' like a big pretend show."
He said nothing.
"Bobby's a liar, Reacher," she said. "I told you that."
"I guess he is. Because he also told me you brought some other guy down here and he got Josh and Billy to run him off. But Josh and Billy didn't know anything about any guy.
She was quiet for a long moment.
No, that was true, she said. I met a man up in Pecos about a year ago. We had an affair. At first, just at his place up there. But he wanted more.
So you brought him here?
It was his idea. He thought he could get work and be close to me. I thought it was crazy, but I went along with it. That's where I got the idea to ask you to come. Because it actually worked for a spell. 2 or 3 weeks. Then Bobby caught us.
And what happened?
That was the end of it. My friend left.
So why would Josh and Billy deny it to me?
Maybe it wasn't Josh and Billy who ran him off. Maybe they didn't know about it. Maybe Bobby did it himself. My friend wasn't as big as you. He was a school teacher, out of work.
And he just disappeared.
I saw him again, just once, back in Pecos. He was scared. Wouldn't talk to me.
Did Bobby tell Sloop?
He promised he wouldn't. We had a deal.
What kind of a deal?
She went quiet again, just rode on, sitting slackly on the swaying horse.
The usual kind,
she said.
If I'd do something for him, he'd keep quiet.
What kind of something?
She paused again.
Something I really don't want to tell you about,
she said.
I see.
Yes, you see.
And did he keep quiet?
I really have no idea. He made me do it twice. It was disgusting. He's disgusting. But he promised faithfully. But he's a liar, so I'm assuming he told Sloop anyway, on one of his brotherly visits. I always knew it was a lose-lose gamble, but what could I do? What choice did I have?
Bobby figures that's why I'm here. He thinks we're having an affair, too.
She nodded.
That would be my guess. He doesn't know Sloop hits me. Even if he did, he wouldn't expect me to do anything about it.
Reacher was quiet for a spell, another 20 yards, 30, at the slow, patient pace of a walking horse.
You need to get out, he said. How many times do you have to hear it?
I won't run,
she answered. They reached the top of the rise, and she made a small sound, and her horse stopped walking. His stopped, too, at her shoulder. They were about 50 feet above the plain. Ahead of them, to the west, the caliche sloped gently down again, pocked by dry gulches the size of ballparks. Behind them, to the east, the red house and the other buildings in the compound were spread out a mile away, flat on the baked land, like a model. The road ran like a gray ribbon, north and south. Behind the tiny motor barn, the dirt track wandered south and east through the desert, like a scar on burned and pockmarked skin. The air was dry, and unnaturally clear all the way to both horizons, where it broke up into haze. The heat was a nightmare. The sun was fearsome. Reacher could feel his face burning.
Take care as we go down,
Carmen said.
Stay balanced.
She moved off ahead of him, letting her horse find its own way down the incline. He kicked with his heels and followed her. He lost the rhythm as his horse stepped short and he started bouncing uncomfortably.
Follow me,
she called. He was moving to the right, toward a dry gulch with a flat floor, all stone and sand. He started trying to figure which rein he should pull on, but his horse turned anyway. Its feet crunched on gravel and slipped occasionally. Then it stepped right down into the gulch, which jerked him violently backward and forward. Ahead of him, Carmen was slipping out of the saddle. Then she was standing on the ground, stretching, waiting for him. His horse stopped next to hers, and he shook his right foot free of the stirrup and got off by doing the exact opposite of what had got him on a half hour before.
"So, what do you think?"
she asked.
"Well, I know why John Wayne walked funny."
She smiled briefly and led both horses together to the rim of the gulch and heaved a large stone over the free ends of both sets of reins. He could hear absolute silence, nothing at all behind the buzz and shimmer of the heat. She lifted the flap of her saddlebag and took out her pocketbook, zipped it open, and slipped her hand in and came out with a small chromium handgun.
"You promised you'd teach me," she said.
"Wait," he said.
"What?"
He said nothing. Stepped left, stepped right. Crouched down, stood tall. Stared at the floor of the gulch, moving around, using the shadows from the sun to help him.
"What?"
she said again.
"Somebody's been here," he said. "There are tracks. Three people, a vehicle driving in from the west."
"Tracks?" she said. "Where?"
He pointed. "Tire marks. Some kind of a truck. Stopped here. Three people crawled up to the edge on their knees." He put himself where the tracks ended at the rim of the gulch, lay down on the hot grit, and hold himself forward on his elbows, raised his head.
"Somebody was watching the house," he said.
"How do you know?"
"Nothing else to see from here."
She knelt alongside him, the chromium pistol in her hand.
"It's too far away," she said.
"Must have used field glasses. Telescopes, even."
"Are you sure?"
"You ever see reflections? The sun on glass, in the mornings when the sun was in the east?"
She shuddered.
"No,"
she said.
"Never."
"Tracks are fresh," he said. "Not more than a day or two old."
She shuddered again.
"Sloop," she said. "He thinks I'm going to take Ellie. Now I know he's getting out. He's having me watched."
Reacher stood up and walked back to the center of the bowl.
"Look at the tire tracks," he said. "They were here four or five times."
He pointed down. There were several overlapping sets of tracks in a complex network. At least four, maybe five. The tire treads were clearly pressed into the powdered sand. There was a lot of detail. The outside shoulder of the front right tire was nearly bald.
"But they're not here today," Carmen said. "Why not?"
"I don't know," Reacher said.
Carmen looked away, held out the gun to him.
"Please, show me how to use this," she said.
He moved his gaze from the tracks in the sand and looked at the gun. It was a Lorsen L-22 automatic, 2.5-inch barrel, chrome frame, with plastic molded grips made to look like pink mother-of-pearl. Made in Mira Loma, California, not too long ago, and probably never used since it left the factory.
"Is it a good one?"
she asked.
"How much did you pay for it?"
"Over $80.
"Where?"
"In a gun store up in Pecos."
"Is it legal?"
She nodded.
"I did all the proper paperwork. Is it any good?"
"I guess," he said. "As good as you'll get for $80, anyway."
"The man in the store said it was ideal."
"For what?"
"For a lady. I didn't tell him why I needed it."
He hefted it in his hand. It was tiny, but reasonably solid. Not light, not heavy. Not heavy enough to be loaded, anyway. "Where are the bullets?" he asked.
She stepped back toward the horses, took a small box out of her bag, came back and handed it to him.